This is the Geek Dads, the podcast of GeekDad.com on the Wired Blog Network. This is episode 22. Pocahontas was a senator? Dad, this is episode 22, and the panel for today, our old favorite, Mr. Brian Little. How are you this week, Brian?
Fair, literally.
Fair to middle?
There's a 4th of July fair going on all week in a little town called Faith near here, so we just got back from taking the kid to ride all the assorted rides. She's finally tall enough.
Oh, awesome. Is that like fair with an extra E, or with an E?
No, this would be fair as in carnival.
Oh, well, so much for that joke. All right.
No. It's not. Well, the fair with the extra E is in September around here.
Oh, all right.
And we go to that, too.
All right. Awesome. Yeah, we just got, in fact, we got back 2 hours ago from the six-hour drive down from Ashland, which was our halfway point from our staying up in Southern Oregon to see some relatives. Everybody who checked the blog today saw the my really exciting video of a hummingbird, which was from the aunt and uncle's backyard in Southern Washington, Southern Washington, on the way up, we killed ourselves. We actually drove straight from Fremont to Southern Washington. It took us about 13 hours with only a couple of breaks. And, you know, probably the best thing that technology has done for any family ever doing long trips is the portable DVD player. Because the boys watched all three of the classic Indiana Jones films and a season of Ben 10, an animated series. And probably we only heard three or four. How much further do we have to go? And besides that, they were plugged in the whole time, and it was no problem. So thank God for technology.
Oh yeah.
All right, Mr. John Bastel, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing just fine. We're getting ready for our annual 4th of July celebration in our backyard, and a lot more work than we'd ever really like.
Are there going to be fireworks?
Possibly.
I mean, of your own use or viewing elsewhere? Or
we have some left over from last year. Maybe we can see if they still work. They've been in a derelict tub the whole time, so hopefully they're still good.
Will it explode? Yeah, sadly, Fremont has completely outlawed all fireworks. And
you guys obviously didn't have Jesse Ventura as your governor.
No, obviously not.
The governor that came out and spoke against using the fireworks this year.
Yeah, actually, no, it's not a state thing. It's a city thing.
No, I understand. He was, didn't he go on the radio though asking people not to, or go on television? It was on NPR the other
day. Well, I think so, especially considering that we've already got 1,000 fires burning in the state.
Yeah.
Simply from lightning strikes.
Well, what would one or two more be?
I know.
Exactly.
Sort of the proverbial anti-drop in the bucket. Was it? The proverbial spark on a hillside. Yeah.
Wait a minute. Which proverb is that?
I don't know. I'm sure it's one we can make up real quick in California this week.
Yeah. Newcastle.
All right, thank you, and Mr. Matt Blum, welcome back. You returned. You weren't afraid.
Well, you know, I'm brave.
Obviously, we didn't beat him up by using PCs.
Yeah, that's true. We can take a task on that. I mean, you're having audio troubles with Skype. How are we supposed to troubleshoot you if you don't even have the damn same preference panel? You don't even call it preferences. What's wrong with you, man? So how are you this week?
I'm doing pretty well, Kent. I just got back from a trip myself. Went up to Massachusetts to see my in-laws. My wife's brother got married over the weekend. So congratulations to him and his now wife. So that's pretty cool. Actually, my wife and kids are still up there.
So you're batching it tonight.
Yeah, I had to fly back for, go to work, earn money, unfortunate fact of society. Just couldn't afford to take too much vacation time.
Well, awesome.
Sorry, go ahead.
Welcome back. We are Danless tonight. I'm not sure what his excuse was. Couldn't have been that important, but I guess, you make these decisions. And Russ also, Russ was going to make it and then realized he had to go pick his kids up somewhere. And I don't know what that's all about. So I don't know which one of, Matt or John is technically sitting in the Russ Neumeier Memorial chair, but one or the other. So
Dan and I can share the Minneapolis chair.
There you go. So I was gonna bring up one thing tonight. Actually, Matt had sort of brought this up. Actually, brought the topic up earlier, and it actually coincides very well with something that I'm working on right now. Hasn't been mentioned anywhere else, and knock on. I've actually got wood here. Knock on wood. Hopefully, this is something that's going to happen. There is the potential right now for a Geek Dad book. Hopefully if it happens, all three of you that are listening to this podcast, not including Matt, John, and Brian, some people might be interested in it, but right now all that it is in terms of existing is an idea. And, I was actually approached by a literary agent who thought this would be good fodder for it. We had a conference call, talked through a bunch of ideas, and they set me loose on trying to come up with a proposal. Because then what happens is I come up with a proposal for a book, which is like an introduction and a sample chapter or two with a good vision for what it's going to be about, what its content's going to be. And then the agent sort of polishes that up and goes and tries to sell it to a publisher. So they sort of become your marketing arm in terms of actually getting it purchased, and then they take a percentage off of that if it gets bought. And then they can also help you work out any international rights if they're going to be, or if you're going to, audiobook it or whatever else. So first of all, just in terms of, the potential for writing a book, this may actually be one of the coolest opportunities that have ever come to me in my life. And hopefully I'm going to actually be able to follow through and do something with it. The thought is, or one of the things that I'm working on right now that is, all right, I've really gone on a long path to get to this point, is defining geek versus nerd versus dork versus whatever else. And so Matt brought up the idea of having a discussion about that, and I wanted to throw this down as something to talk through, because I actually started working. There was a discussion amongst some of the Geek Dads the other day about this topic, and Chris Anderson of all people brought up, made an amusing mention of the idea of a Venn diagram, where one circle was obsessiveness, and the other circle was social skills, and where the two of those overlapped was where you define a geek. And that was pretty good. I like that, but I thought it needed a little bit more. So I've actually already started working on this, a Venn diagram that would be part of the book proposal, would in theory be part of the book, where you have obsessiveness, you have social skills, and then you have something along the lines of depth of knowledge or knowledgeability was my idea, knowledgeability. And so those three things overlap, all three together, you have a geek. Because, as some people have talked about, geeks, may know a lot about many things, or you know, or may know a little bit about a lot of things, or they may be very knowledgeable, deeply knowledgeable in a couple of subjects. They are generally self-aware and a little more social, especially geek dads. You know, we've at least had the social skills to, you know, get married and have kids. So we've got something going for us somewhere. But still, we also have a certain obsessiveness, whether it's about technology and gadgets or the internet or some other hobby that we really put a certain level of passion into. And so it's the intersection of those three things that defines a geek, or especially a geek dad. And then what I was trying to do was, then you have all the places where two of those things overlap, or where each of those things are separate. And I was trying to place the words, you know, the other sort of geek adjacent concepts in each of those. Like I had nerd being knowledge, you know, knowledgeability or knowledge and obsessiveness without social skills.
In our house, the kind of pocket definition has always been that a geek is somebody who's figured a way to take those tendencies and turn them into something that makes money, whereas a nerd is somebody who probably still lives in his parents' basement because okay. He's never managed to turn them to anything productive. The idea that, you know, geekiness,
right,
it doesn't imply that you're stuck in a cave.
Yeah. And maybe that could be a partial, you know, maybe under the list of each of the three concepts, you have sort of generalized examples, and under social skills could be the ability to actually go out and market whatever it is you're obsessive about. So I think that could fit into the pattern, or we can adjust a little bit. But you know, while we're talking about this, now we're back down to two because people must have gotten really sick of this. But I wanted to bring up that we actually we're actually broadcasting this. So in the future, anyone who's listening to this podcast that'll come out on Wednesday the 2nd and didn't catch the notice that went up on the blog, we have finally put together the technology to broadcast our taping of the podcast live through via Ustream. So if anyone ever wants to come and be part of the taping of this in terms of hanging out in the chat room, throwing us questions from the chat room, stuff that we can talk about and answer on air, please feel free. We will always put something up around 7 p.m. on alternating Tuesday nights, 7 p.m. Pacific, and you can come into the chat room and sort of be part of it, and maybe get your comments included in the podcast.
See, this is what happens when AV geeks grow up and get a free hand with the technology.
We can make it work. All right, so I've talked all that through. What do you guys think about, you know, the Venn diagram or anything else? I mean, we've all probably had to deal with aspects of this over our lives and being called whatever names. And, you know, what do these things mean to you?
A dork would be someone with no social skills but obsession and no knowledge either.
I think that works. I think I may actually have put that way.
Lost our last viewer.
Who's left? Oh, that's so sad.
I think it's just Ken that's left.
It's probably, no, somebody, I think, well, maybe it might be. That's it. I'm all by myself in the chat room now.
I mean, to me, you know, all geek is the only one that has any positive connotations, really. Oh. All the rest of when we were growing up, all the rest of them were things that you didn't want to be. You know, geek you could deal with.
I mean, the amusing aspect of it being is that the original definition geek were the circus performers.
Bit the heads off live chickens, yeah.
Yeah.
And actually, I was just looking it up online. The dictionary says that it probably derived from the German word, low German word for fool.
There you go. Okay, I just pulled up my Venn diagram. And so it was the three circles: social skills, knowledgeability, and obsessiveness. Where all three overlap, you get a geek. Where obsessiveness and knowledgeability overlap, you have a nerd. Where you have only knowledgeability, I suggested dweeb. And where you have only obsessiveness, I suggested freak.
Dork.
Dork.
You like dork better for obsessiveness?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's open to interpretation. I've often heard dork just used as a synonym for nerd. But
yeah, that's the hard part. Like, there's so much overlap, and yeah. It's probably regional too.
Yeah. That was my experience.
But so you see, if we get it in print like this, we have the opportunity to define it for all.
We can standardize.
Exactly. Wikipedia will reference us. All
right. That's a good thing, right?
Right. Well, depends upon the week.
Can we put out an RFC for this?
So dork becomes, you know, all obsessive. So we have a couple of more spots. We have the overlap between knowledgeability and social skills, but without obsessiveness. We have the overlap of obsessiveness and social skills without knowledgeability. And then we have just purely social skills, whatever that would represent. I mean, that's tough, you know, unless you put Vanna White in there. I don't know what you do. No, what did you say, John? That guy, yeah.
A fraternity.
Wait a second, frat guys have social skills?
I wasn't aware.
If not that, what? Yes.
I think the concept there. I mean, like as Brian was saying, it's not necessarily just being Mr. or Ms. Popular. It may also be the huckster, the person that is all about selling, or the politician. Or so, is there a sort of geek, nerd, dweeb, dork associated word that applies to someone who's all glam, no substance?
Celebrity.
That's a tough one.
It is.
That might require some.
I like politician myself, but then I live in the Washington area, so.
But we'll pencil that one down. That could just be for, you know, irony, or for the sake of humor. All right, so then I challenge you. So social skills and obsessiveness without knowledgeability.
You need to post an image of this thing because I'm having trouble keeping my head. In Matt's sort of Washington terms, one of those seems to almost fit the definition of wonk. As in policy wonk.
Oh, yeah. That would be all knowledgeability and social skills without obsessiveness, maybe?
I think that would be all knowledgeability and obsessiveness.
Yeah. Well, that would be, that's true. Although some of them have social skills.
Stephanopoulos.
Yeah. Of course, he's more of a media guy now, but I was thinking more like, I don't know, James Carr, you know?
I'm afraid my live broadcast has frozen up.
Ew. All
right, well, you know what? While we're waiting to figure that out, anyone seen WALL-E yet?
No.
No, okay.
No.
Wow, we are hardcore geeks. Everybody was there opening night.
What is wrong with you people?
We all have kids. That's what's wrong.
We were on a family trip and we had time. So,
yeah, I had to go to a wedding. You know, so
Emma was away with grandparents this weekend, and our choice for a movie was one that we couldn't go see with her. So we finally got to go see Indy.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, all right. So, how did you feel about Indy?
Oh, hello. That's kind of difficult to explain. I enjoyed it, but I understand sort of the mold that it comes out of. You know, the old serial westerns and whatnot.
Right.
Where, you know, the movie was the same every time. All that changed was the cast of bad guys. So, you know, when you went to see one of these movies, you knew very much what you were getting. So I went in knowing what I was going to get out of an indie movie, and I got it.
No. Right. It was sort of the definition of pulp.
Yeah, it was a pleasant excursion to the theater and 90 minutes where I didn't feel the need to, you know, distract myself or get up and go use the restroom or anything. So, okay, yeah, it was fine.
I totally agree with that.
I got sticker shock at the theater.
Oh, well.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It was $20, man.
$10 per person, right?
Yeah, well, actually, the reason it shocked me is because my brother and I went to see Iron Man opening night, and it was 18 then, so it's going up $2 in a couple of months.
Holy Toledo.
Yeah. And yeah.
Then you want to buy popcorn.
Oh, there was a new record for that. Lord, they had a $16 combo, which was a large popcorn and two large Cokes.
$16?
$15.75, I kid you not.
Where do you live?
Charlotte, North Carolina.
Really?
Yeah, which is not typically that expensive. I think.
Yeah, I was to say, that's if you're in San Francisco or something, maybe.
No, talk to Ken about that.
Yeah, that's about right. We go out for a, you know, even if we go to a family matinee, after popcorn, a couple of sodas or whatever, we're already discussing a $40 bill.
Jeez.
Well, yeah, I don't really blame the theaters for, you know, for raising the prices of the concessions too much, because that's where they make the most of their money.
Yeah.
But it's just, the price of the tickets is just outrageous. Especially since they put ads in front of the movies.
Well, and if, you know, I don't know about you guys, but for us, going to the movies has become something that we really reserve for things that we think are best on the big screen. So the big summer action flicks, the big special effects festivals, stuff like that.
Absolutely.
You know, with a middling level home theater system and a decent sized screen, you don't hardly need to go to the movies anymore. Unless you really want an expensive night out.
I know, that's totally true. I mean, there's nothing less than, you know, Iron Man or Indy or you know, WALL-E or something like that, where part of the experience is also the theater experience, but also getting to see all the big special effects up on the screen,
getting your eardrums blown out.
Right. Nothing beyond that. You know, it's just as good to wait 2 months and Netflix it or whatever you're gonna, you know, whatever source you have for getting them, and we've all got, you know, 40 to 60 inch televisions with 5.1 to 7.1 surround and whatever.
We're saving money, honey. That's how we convince our wives. How many thousand dollars was that television? No. It's going to save us money in the long term.
Absolutely.
I have to, in 30 years, it will save us. But
that's where their social skills come into play.
That's what you keep telling yourself.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Actually, I am a blessed man, because it was my wife who kicked us out the door to go and pick up a big screen TV.
Really?
She's a big fan of science fiction and we're both big movie geeks in general, and it's always been, you know, important to us both to be able to have a pleasant viewing experience. And so, you know, the day it finally came, I think the old tube we had died or I forget, there was some reason why we needed it, and we had a little bit of pocket change, and we went down to the Cambridge Soundworks outlet.
And nice.
What was scary is, well, all right, it was really bad, and then we couldn't make it. All right, here's the story, and you guys will just think we're, you know, terrible people or really, really cool. We went for the plasma first. We bought, I believe it was a 50-inch plasma, and this was like 3 years ago. It was a four-figure television, and the first number was not, you know, was. It took a number of fingers to count to. And so, but we weren't quite as educated as we should have been yet. And we got this home and hooked it up to our cable, and it looked horrible. We didn't have a good HD input signal, and it didn't have decent up conversion. And so everything looked muddy, and just really, really poor, and we were unhappy with it. And often we're kind of complacent people, and we'll deal with stuff and figure we made a mistake, whatever. And we just said, no, not for this, whatever. So we take the thing back, and we could only get store credit for it. We bought it at the outlet store. And so instead of the single 50-inch plasma We walked back out of the store with a 52-inch DLP.
Bingo.
And the new 6.1 surround system. And the new rack and TV table for the TV and all the and the new player and I think like a power conditioner and a couple other things, and we still had money left over. Oh, I think that's when I got my Grado headphones and some stuff like that too. so it was pathetic, but it ended up in, you know, a real nice. Oh yeah, and the new, the whole new speaker system.
That's really funny that your wife was the one who got you off the dime to go do that, because my wife's kind of a big driver. She likes to watch hockey, and especially NCAA basketball. And
that's hockey.
No, I said hockey and NCAA basketball.
Oh, I thought you said never mind. Okay, go ahead.
No, two separate entities there. Although I would like to watch NCAA basketball players playing hockey.
That would be amusing.
On a basketball court, they're gonna be fine. No, so in the basketball shoes, that's it. So, you know, I was the one sort of pushing to get the larger set, and had already, you know, done some research and talked to my brother and had knew about the DLPs and how much better a deal that was. And Lara was just very kind of, nah, you don't really want to do this. I'm gonna spend the money. And she gets in the store and starts looking at the sets. And walks out going, yeah, we're doing this. 15 minutes and, you know, eyeballs on the screen was all it took. The difference was that vivid. So, and she, you know, from that point on, you know, she was like really on board and, you know, come on, go ahead and get it done.
Aren't our wives wonderful?
Absolutely.
Definitely.
And I say that without the slightest trace of irony.
I would like to welcome our chat room back.
Are we back online? Woo!
We are back online, and it actually shows that there are 7 people hanging about there. That, you know, these may be poor innocents who just happened to be sitting on the front page at Geek Dad and got sucked in. But, oh, no, so we lost one. Good, they're fleeing now.
they spotted us. Run! What is going
on? And 2 of them are Ken.
Oh, that could be. I got hung on before with... With the other one, I probably can't kick myself off until I totally log out. But, yeah, so wives and home theater systems. And that's of course, and she's also, she can be such an instigator, too, because she's the one, what was it, 2 Christmases ago, who decided, you know, we had an old, we had a PS1, and of course, it was very long on the tooth, and you know, she figured, well, we need to get a new game machine. But she went to the store and talked to the guy, and you know, got the spiel that, well, you know, the GameCube is better for kids because you can get more, there are more games, kid friendly games made for it. But the Xbox has the better graphics and the better, you know, better high end games and stuff. So for Christmas, she bought us both.
Cool.
Thank you, honey. That sounds awesome. Well, guys, everybody check their email. The Venn diagram should be in your mailboxes. I hope.
Yeah, looks like it. Cool.
Snazzy graphic, even.
Yeah, I'm doing it on Vector Designer.
Cool.
So, not that anybody at home's, you know, going to be able to play along, because I can't post it to the chat screen, but
that's the next goal, is a live whiteboard.
You could print it out and just hold it up to the camera.
All right, now that you say that, of course, probably using the printer is going to knock the signal offline or something.
For social skills only, could be a schmooze.
Yeah, all right. So, guys, a little birdie has whispered in my ear that I think it's time for the roundtable. So, how about Brian? Brian, what post did you want to talk about this week?
I enjoyed Z's post today, Beyond Hardcore, because he really touches on something that I've found myself mulling over more than once in GameStop, surrounded by small screaming children and sullen teenagers, et cetera, et cetera.
Which ones were running the store?
This difficult to say some days. Feeling distinctly older and more out of place than I do in most places in my life. But he gets to the idea that we are the gaming market that's not marketed to very efficiently at all. I mean, I think he's exactly right in highlighting the sort of with us or against us marketing attitude that a lot of the game vendors take, you know, where either you're a gamer and you're elite, or you're not, you know, you're one of them. But I'm very much in the mold that he's discussing. You know, I play games when I can squeeze them in. I've been known to stay up late and, you know, hit the sack later than I should just so I can finish a level or two. I play because I enjoy the games, not because I'm trying to rank up a gamer score. It's very plain paging through Game Informer or whatever that I'm not the target market, even though I have a lot of spare money and I'm willing to go spend it. I think the one exception to that has been the Wii, which seems like a first stab at maybe marketing to this crowd, casual gamers.
I think so,
who are interested in more than just the standard sort of run-of-kid games.
Brian, you're lead.
I'm lead?
Yeah.
I use a Mac, that's right. No. I'm sorry, I didn't say that.
No, that's arrogant. I know, it's similar, but...
No. The leadness brings arrogance later on.
See, if you picture a Venn diagram and you have the three... Never mind.
I will reach through the microphone and throttle you, Ken. I mean, what do you guys think about that? I mean, do you kind of find yourself... I don't know if any of the rest of you game. Ken, I know you do.
Yeah, I mean, exactly the same. I play when I get the chance to play, and we've got a lot of games in the house. The boys play a fair bit, but you're right, especially as a dad, and I wish I could have more time to do that. I don't. I love the game. I think the Wii has been the perfect platform for the casual gamer, for somebody who doesn't want to have to devote hours first to figuring out how to play a game and can just get into it at an easy level. And then if you want to spend the time, you can get to advanced levels and such. And who's not going to obsess over not being able to see the reflection of an explosion in the ripples of the water in a puddle in front of you.
Mm-hmm. I don't obsess if that's not there, but boy, if it is, I love it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but I mean that's why we, you know, for this generation of console, we picked the Wii rather than getting a PS3 or an Xbox 2. It was, you know, we knew there was going to be a lot more family friendly titles for it, and you know, this is the first console that my wife has really gotten into, and honestly now she plays just about as much as I do, and you know, we enjoy our Wii bowling, and we picked up the Wii Fit, and we've picked up, you know, a slew of other games that we can just sit down either as a pair or as a family and go and spend an hour and have fun together with doing. In fact, we were on this trip this weekend, and we packed the Wii. We mm-hmm. brought it up to the big family gathering, and the four kids, it was the perfect icebreaker to get the kids, you know, the cousins that hadn't seen each other for a year and a half, to get them just hanging out and playing together.
I think it was really aptly named.
Go ahead, yeah. Matt.
I was just saying it was so you're saying it was aptly named?
Yeah. Everybody was going, Wii. Yeah.
It was a Wii. It was Wii all together.
Exactly. That's what I meant.
But it's all of those things. And that was, you know, that's what they've actually literally explained was part of the reason why they picked that name was that it had so many connotations.
Matt, are you a gamer?
Not as much as I used to be, but I had some really bad carpal tunnel syndrome for a while, so I gave.
Oh, that'll take you right out of it.
Yeah, so I kind of gave that a rest for a while. I've been trying to convince my wife to get a Wii. So. maybe I'll make her listen to this podcast.
Yeah, especially and through the part about the big screen TV too, right?
Exactly.
Gotta keep up with the other guys.
Can't help. Can't hurt at all. Yeah, I really want to get away. Played around with some of friends' houses, and it definitely rocks.
John, how about you?
I played some Wii bowling over at my friend's house. It's a lot of fun and pretty easy to learn too. But that's about it.
Just me again. Gosh.
My son loves it too. My son has played it a couple of times, and every time he sees one in the store, he says, "Can we get it? Can we get it?"
Well, that's the magic thing right there. He actually saw it in the store.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Yeah. Well, now, I mean, this time of year, it's not too hard to find. Seems to be. I keep telling my wife. I said, you know, if we wait until November, or December, they're going to disappear again. So.
Oh, we have to say hi. Geek Dad Michael Harrison has just popped up in the chat room. All right, so John, how about you? What do you got for a post this week? Thank you, Brian. Excellent topic.
Speaking of Michael Harrison, I want to talk about his post from yesterday, Fan Creations Enhance 4th Edition D&D. He had dredged up some pretty cool resources, fan materials that people have come up with, like cool and better designed character sheets and cards that they can write their powers on. Apparently, like in 4th edition, pretty much everyone has powers that they can use, whether it's like a special strike for a fighter or something sneaky for a rogue or something. So everyone needs to keep track of this stuff. So people came up with the idea of putting them on index cards, and so they can have all their powers in front of them without having to look at a messy sheet of paper or something. It's pretty cool.
That's what. Now I haven't read the new rules yet, and so they're sort of like Magic the Gathering cards, or how does it work that as something separate from a character sheet?
Well, it's just like having one power on a card, on an index card. And you just have a stack of them just so you can, if you happen to be using one, you can have it on the table. Or if it's only usable once a day, you can take it out of your stack. The rules themselves are pretty cool. I do have a rule book set. And the it's kind of like the old paradigm of, the first level magic user with 3 hit points and a detect magic spell.
And the target painted on his forehead.
Yes, is gone. You start off with like your constitution plus like 12 hit points. You already have powers and you get powers every level. And it's kind of like it's easy to get started and play. You don't have to be as cautious as you were in the original rules. So you can, and you can also do like healing things on yourself. Just it's kind of like the more heroic and larger than life than previous editions have been.
That's probably a great way to get to get people playing a little bit more, because obviously that was one of the big drawbacks, especially sort of first to second edition. I remember, when they came up with the skills and proficiencies, that I think that helped a great deal, making a starting character a little more customizable and a little more interesting. But I haven't seen it. Have they still got skills and proficiencies in the new edition? Okay.
I don't think it's as much proficiencies as skills, but everyone gets skills throughout their career and they get better at them. Yeah, it's definitely very skill-oriented.
And this probably reveals my geeky bent, but the power cards to me just sound like a hipster PDA for Dungeons & Dragons.
That's good. I could see
somebody picking.
No, I could totally see this geeky guy walking in. He's got a little folder. Lays down his folder on the desk. It's got a character sheet in it, and then pulls a very beautiful velvet bag out, pulls the drawstring, and he's got all these gorgeous dice on it. And then the chain attached to his belt goes to his back pocket. He pulls this thing out, and it's this little fold-over Moleskine wallet that he opens up and pulls these index cards out of. And that's your hipster D&D fan. He's that guy with dice. Yeah.
I'm actually not quite sure how hip that is, but you know.
Well, at least he thinks it is.
Right.
Well, really, that's what's important. Awesome. All right, let's see, where are we up to Matt?
I believe so.
All right, Mr. Matt, what do you got?
Well, I wanted to just touch on the Geekly Reader post that I made last week about Arabelle's Raven. I wanted to start a weekly series, at least weekly, I guess, of posts about books that are good for kids that aren't you know, really well known. And this is one of my all-time favorites. It's just absolutely hysterical and just absolutely great for kids. My kids love it, and they my son, even after we just finished reading it as a family, you know, grabbed the copy and then just started reading it on his own, taking it up to his room and reading. And they'll actually go around and you know, playing the characters and through the house, which is highly comical. I have another Geekly Reader post, which should go up tomorrow, I'm assuming.
Yeah, tomorrow.
Yeah, and it's about a book called Half Magic that I used to like when I was a kid, and we read it with the kids a couple months ago. And it's about these four kids living in Ohio in the 1920s who find a magic coin, a talisman. At first they think it's just a nickel, but it grants wishes. The difference between that and your standard wish-granting story is that it grants them by halves. So they the first time they discover what it does is Jane, the one who found it, wishes, you know, because nothing's going on there. She says, you know, I wish there'd be, you know, a house on fire, you know, because that would be something that's happening. And what happens is that a playhouse catches fire because it's kind of a half house. So it grants the wish by halves. And so eventually they figure out the rules, of course, and they figure out that they have to ask for things for twice as much as they want. But of course there's accidents and, you know, people accidentally wish for things without realizing it because, you know, you never see a wish story where, you know, you never see a wish story where somebody, you know, something grants wishes and everything goes smoothly. That wouldn't be much of a story. So, but it's just a lot of fun. And one of the things that my wife and I talked about when we were reading it is that unlike a lot of stories, the kids in the story themselves like to read. Like it goes out of its way to mention that, and they talk about the books that they like to read, it occurred to us that most books just either don't mention it, or if they do, they just kind of breeze by it. I don't know if you guys can think of any exceptions to that, but
no, not so much. I mean, yeah, it's always the heroes in such stories are never quite that self-aware to be able to pull from other knowledge to try and apply it to things, and that's sort of like a fun new level to take things to.
Yeah, so this is I think that my kids were able to identify more easily with the main characters, despite, you know, them living in a world, you know, 80 years ago, where, you know, I mean, because we'd encounter terms for things that just, you know, don't exist anymore. I we'd have to explain what they meant, you know. They talk about telegrams and like, well, why would my kids know what a telegram is? Or, you know, talking about, you know, just something about, you know, the way things were then. And, you know, some of them I even had to look up to remember, because I just don't know enough about that time period. So it actually taught me something too.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, now we've lost the chat room again, but I think this time because my my mobile internet card on my computer decided to lose the connection.
Yeah. Not because it's been an hour since.
Yeah, ooh, it's running really hot too. Oh, I wonder if I did something. Well, maybe offline for a little bit. Anyway. All right, thank you, Matt. All right, last but not least, I'm going to go ahead and talk about what I wanted to bring up was I've done a couple so far, and we're trying to get it not unlike the Your Geekly Reader that we're working hard on coming up with some more sort of regular weekly sort of posts that we can get into some depth and you know look at series of stuff and build more conversations with our readers and our listeners. And so we've introduced the Geek Dad Geeky Question of the Week. And last week the inaugural one was what superhero would help you as a geek and a dad? Not necessarily something that you want for, you know, either having incredible power or, you know, being able to save thousands of lives or whatever, but what's going to help you as a parent? What's going to help you being a geek? And I think the best series of responses that we got from people, most of them were basically talking about, you know, having the ability to understand and communicate effectively with their kids, either reading minds or being able to project, you know, real understanding of points of view with each other. I thought it was kind of cool. I mean, it certainly shows a level of awareness and a desire to bridge those boundaries that sometimes just seem so unfathomable or insurmountable between us and our kids. And then so this week, sort of following on, you know, we were up on a family reunion sort of trip, and it was all about families and cousins and all sorts of stuff. So the second one was just sort of asking, you know, what everybody has a famous person in their family tree somewhere, at least the story of a famous person in their family tree, whether or not it's true or not. Which is true for me. I've got the dark side and the light side, the dark side being Jefferson Davis and the light side being Francis Scott Key. And so threw that out there for everybody to say what famous people are in your family trees that you like to sort of tell your kids about and either inspire them with or, I don't know, maybe even threaten them with. And so I wanted to ask you three guys, since I don't know that any of you actually responded in the comments. Have you guys, or no, Brian, maybe you did you?
Magnetic colon, sir. The room.
All right, are you
dead.
Suggesting a title for the podcast, or?
Certainly. It's a Dave Letterman joke.
Okay.
Wait a minute. I know I have that sound effect of crickets chirping here somewhere.
Tweet. No, it comes from the list of the top 10 least popular superhero powers.
Oh, okay.
Magnetic colon, really bendy thumbs, the ability to shake exactly 2 aspirin out of the bottle.
Oh, okay.
So, no, I didn't have a serious answer. Oh. I was at work. I wasn't devoting a lot of thought to it.
What about the ancestor thing?
I did not answer that one. No.
Do you have an answer for it?
I'm sorry, I'm distracted. I think I hear noises from the kids' room, so I'm busy being dad instead of geek right now. Do I have an answer for the... my wife is related to Thomas Hart Benton.
Okay.
Well, three names, so either some famous Revolutionary-era person or a serial killer.
No, painter and senator, I want to say. My grandmother claimed she was related to Pocahontas somehow or another.
There were two Thomas Hart Bentons. One was a senator and one was a painter.
Pocahontas was a senator?
I don't know which one. No, I'm glad. I can never remember. I'm sorry. I'm okay. Spacing. zoning out here a little bit. It's late. But yeah, like I said, my paternal grandmother claimed that relationship to Pocahontas, but there's no proof of it. And I have a relative who was married to Daniel Boone, but that's so far back in the family tree that I can't remember her name. So that's about the best Boone. I can do.
Yeah,
Mrs. Boone, yes.
The late Mrs. Boone, yes.
Very late.
That's probably one that could be looked up quickly. But all right, cool. Matt, how about you?
I don't think I have anybody famous in my family tree. My family all came from Eastern Europe. And you know, if there was anybody famous in my family tree, then the records were all destroyed by the Tsars, or if they weren't by the Tsars, they were destroyed by Stalin, or you know, so. If there was anybody famous, I just don't have any idea.
Yeah, they probably burned all the records after Vlad was finally beheaded.
So I figure, you know, future generations can talk about me as the famous one.
What a sad, sad fate. Okay. How about you, John?
No one that I can identify in my family tree is even vaguely famous. However...
All right, I need to get a whole new podcast cast, don't I?
I think we need a new podcast editor.
Oh, that too. Okay.
As distantly related to the Bechtels, who are... It's the kind of like this company like Halliburton that's this...
I'm working with a bunch of Bechtel people right now.
Well-connected in Washington and do Halliburton-type stuff. So, but that was back like in the... I don't know, War of 1812 days when we split off from them. So can't say I'm very famous.
When they were solidifying the Illuminati's hold over the federal government.
The family split up and John's side kept the correct spelling.
That's right.
All right, awesome. I was going to bring up one more thing before we end for the night, and I'll say this piece and then put it around for everybody else, anything you guys have to promote before the next podcast. Finally, and I think Brian, I don't know where you are at on yours, because I think you were in on this too, but finally my Spore creation has been added at sporevote.com. And this is a little PR thing or a promotional thing that the folks behind Spore are doing to try and you know, obviously promote the game, and so there are two levels to what's going on at sporevote.com. There's the Sporelebrity group, which are actual famous people that were given, you know, free preview copies of the creature creator to build their own stuff, and then there's the more Spore side, which is where the rest of us, you know, lowly blogger types who did get in on the free preview but aren't quite prime time
Robin material. Williams
or don't
you aren't quite Robin Williams.
No or did, I'm
does Spore creation have hair all over it?
What's that?
I was just wondering if Robin Williams' Spore creation had hair all over it.
I haven't gotten to take a look at that one.
I don't think he was recreating himself.
Okay.
but what I want to bring up, and I have no idea what they're going to be doing with this whole voting thing, whether there's anything more than the promotional aspect to it. But I just wanted to, you know, anyone who's listening to this, anyone who's getting into the whole Spore thing, it would be fun at least to have you stop by sporevote.com, sporevote.com. Look on the more Spore side for little old me, Ken Denmead of Geek Dad, and give me a vote, give me a likes. Take a look at my Centaur, which is my sort of D&D inspired combination of a centaur and a manticore. And who knows? Maybe we can put Geek Dad on the map with getting us you know, very popular on the Spore site. And so Brian, were you going to be part of this too?
I have not been able to register an account.
Really?
Yeah, I've tried 3 or 4 times and haven't gone back to it. But yeah, if I can ever get that to work, I certainly will.
Okay.
Jump in.
You know, I had trouble like the first day trying, and I don't think they had their servers up and running right yet. But after a couple of days, I was able to get in, and then it was another couple of days before I was actually able to upload anything, and then there was like that silly had to sign a form for the PR people and all that. But so about 3 weeks, I think, after we got the original software to start playing with, something is actually up there. So that's cool. Please, if you're a fan, go and take a look at sporevote.com and maybe vote up my creature. That would be cool. And otherwise, Brian, you got anything going in the next couple of weeks?
Actually, I just got samples from UberSticks. I have the UberSticks pack, which is a small sort of 10-piece job that they give you with a few simple machine plans. And I have an Uberpolt and a combination kit that builds a pirate ship or an Uberfo flying disc. Just go to uberstix.com, UberStix. I'll post a review when I've had a chance to play with them a little bit. They're very difficult to describe, but they're building toys. It looks very cool. I just got them, so I'm looking forward to cracking them open here and getting into it. And we'll post a review of that when I've had a chance to mess with it.
Awesome. Okay, John, how about you?
I'm looking forward to reviewing D&D 4th Edition. I haven't really had a chance to play around with the rules or investigate them. I've kind of paged through the books a couple of times, but it's something that's been looming in the horizon for many a month now, and now that it's finally come, I have not had much time to play with it.
Okay, awesome. I'm looking forward to that too, because I mean, you know, once again, as with the video gaming, there never seems to be enough time to do it. But I'd really love to explore the new system, because everything I've heard so far is that it's just wonderful. So I'm looking forward to that. All right, and Matt, have you got anything you would like to plug or anything interesting you're doing in the next couple of weeks?
I'm working on a post about trip my family took last weekend to a new exhibit at the Space Museum, Smithsonian, which has all kinds of cool stuff about colonizing moon colonies and stuff. And kids just had an absolute blast. And really cool pictures from.
Okay, awesome. Awesome. Well, then, if nobody else has anything left to say, I think we're going to call this one good. I want to thank everybody for downloading and subscribing to the podcast. I want to thank the intrepid few people that were in our chat room this week, and we still had a little technical trouble with it, and it's off the air again. So hopefully we'll get it working again better next time, and hopefully if people are interested, you can come in and offer us some comments and questions or whatever. Listen to the recording if you like the spoilers, if you like hearing it raw. Not that it ever gets quite that raw, but
dirty
podcast spoilers.
Yeah, podcast spoilers. And so, other than that, I want to thank John Bastel, Brian Little, Matt Blum, and I am yours truly, Ken Denmead, editor of GeekDad.com. This has been the Geek Dads episode 22, and we will see you next time. Thanks so much, and have a good one. Bye bye.
Take care.
Bye. Thank you.